Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for June 1st. It's a little bit early in the morning, and that's because I woke up early and saw that our park had been burned, our playground, and because I couldn't sleep anyway, I walked over at 5:30 in the morning and took some pictures and came back. Which never happened before.
I don't understand why you burned down a playground.
You know, I immediately thought of 15 buildings in Binghamton that should have been
burned.
Right,
we have like Soviet brutalism going on in Binghamton. If there's something to be destroyed,
I have a list. They should have asked me for a list because I would have given one. I should write down the addresses. I'm sure that would put me on a bad list of the building. Like, why couldn't they go over and burn down the dead Kmart? Like, there's so many things. They could burn down the parking garage downtown. So ugly and scary. Instead, they burned down, and by they, I have no idea, a state-of-the-art new playground for disabled children that is mostly played on by, what would you say, children of color.
Yeah.
It's a lower-income neighborhood.
Well, our neighborhood isn't, but the
right on the other side of the park.
Right on the other side of the park is, and so a lot of people from that side of the park,
like, actually nice play, right? Public housing backs right up on the park, so you can just walk right out of your front door if you mm-hmm. live in subsidized housing.
Yeah,
and go to this beautiful, beautiful playground and park. So they had peaceful protests. I read there was about 1,000 people mm-hmm. downtown Binghamton. They gathered at the park and walked downtown, and it was very orderly, and that was great.
But then
sun went down.
Well, we heard before that. We heard that Antifa was threatening to break into
people's homes
and take the fight to the suburbs or whatever. Whatever it was, which I think is a really bad idea because lots of people have firearms. I wish we had firearms.
New York is a...
Right.
Someone's
saying, you know, just give it a few weeks and we're going to hear a lot of people saying, wait a minute, what happened? Because there's going to be a huge jump in firearm purchases now. I guarantee it. People are going to go out and buy weapons. I'm thinking that's going to happen. Some might go out and do that.
Some
yeah.
may go out and do that. Well, I think it just got a lot more dangerous.
I mean, I don't think that'll work in Texas or
America is now a third world country. because, you know, in other places when people are unhappy, like for instance in Kenya, when there's an election, there's huge rioting, violence and looting. Whenever there's an election. like this kind of thing that's going on or that went on in our own town last night, that's not I can't think of the words. I know you're not supposed to say third world and first world, that's racist. But or even developing worlds. There's no way we can't talk about this. Actually, we wanted to talk about this on our podcast, but I read on Twitter yesterday that you can't say African-American, can't say that. Neither can you say black, can't say that. So I'm not sure we can't talk. We are supposed to talk about race. We must race relations, but we may not use any of the words heretofore used to talk about that. So I think we should remain silent for a few minutes of this podcast.
Should we go back and talk about the whole George Floyd thing? And I mean, I think we should talk about the whole thing from the beginning because all this happens in a week. I mean, in the context of.
It's really amazing.
In the context of a nation already kind of pent up because of the COVID thing, it's really eager to get outside.
But I wasn't eager to get outside and do this.
No, I'm just saying this is like the worst possible time for for something like this to happen because everyone's full of energy and ready to go out and break things and burn things.
Has had enough sleep.
Yeah, everyone's had enough sleep.
So yesterday I watched many videos of the Amish protesting George Floyd, the death of George Floyd, which I thought was fantastic. You know, you've really screwed up when, and there was the witch community came out to protest. The Amish.
Why don't they just call themselves a coven? Isn't it a coven? Is the witch community a coven?
No. It's everybody has their own. The Amish community. Everybody has their community. The universal wrath, justified wrath of the whole world say, you can't do, stop doing that. You can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, did you watch the video?
No, I didn't. And I'm not going to. I didn't watch the Ahmed one either. I can't do that. I can read about it. I've read about it. I do read about it.
But so other things like this, when police officers are, you know, caught doing something brutal or cruel, there's always, well, you know, let's wait and see what else develops. Let's see what other evidence comes out. Maybe this guy was being a real jerk beforehand, but there's nothing that
it doesn't matter.
There's like, nothing that
just there's no a, amount of jerkness yeah. that would.
He was handcuffed on the grounds. Three officers were on top of him. One of them was, you know, crushed his neck, and it was heartbreaking to hear, listen to. I completely understand why people are. I'm angry. I'm angry about that. That guy should, be charged. I mean, third degree murder is. I was trying to look that up. I'm not sure what third degree murder is. I think it's like if you don't set out to premeditate. Yeah, you don't set out to kill somebody. But they just pulled the guy from his car. He wasn't resisting. Threw him on the ground and crushed him. And it just. I mean, it's just
horrifying.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I mean. Here's where we don't know whether that was racially motivated, whether this guy's a racist or not. We have no idea. So I don't think it was right to jump on that immediately. I mean, I definitely see why people were upset.
I see why people do.
I see why people do too. Cause it means that there's certainly a pattern of that. Don't want to say there's not. But I don't see, there's this thing where you, this is what, critical theory does and critical race theory does is it takes a pattern and applies it in every individual case willy-nilly. So because this guy's white and Floyd is black, therefore it's we can know that this is a racially motivated or fueled incident. And I just don't think that's just. You can't know that. You got to wait till the evidence to comes out before you say that. In my mind, it doesn't. It's murder, either way you cut it. So we're not arguing about whether or not this guy's needs to be punished and sent to prison and all of that, or whether this thing was a horrible thing. Of course it was, but does it rank up there with other? I think verified. Accounts of white police officers acting in a racially charged way toward black people. We just don't know that yet. So, but okay. So that having said that, I can see why. Look, and it's just, I think it's a justified thing for the black community to march and say, okay, look, whether this thing was racially motivated or not, this is a problem. This hurts us. Please do something about the racism going on in the country. I can see that's perfectly justified. But then, you know, what happens is this is Marxist tactic. If you go through and read Lenin's writings leading up to the revolution. I mean, one of the things the Bolsheviks did was they glommed on to peaceful protests and they made them violent. They did acts of violence and kind of co-opted peaceful demonstrations into revolutionary actions. And that's what Antifa's trying to do. He's trying to mirror that. Yeah, he said, Lenin's a Hawaii. There's a time to strike. There's a time to turn. There's a revolutionary fervor in a nation that just doesn't know it has a revolutionary fervor. And you have to strike the match by doing
violent things.
Yes.
I really loved, there were two things I've loved watching this all play out on social media. One, I did watch a clip of a group of protesters, peaceful protesters, black and white together, take on a Antifa kid who was trying to beat up the sidewalk to get stuff to throw. And they took him and delivered him to the police safely. I thought that was great. And then the police handled him very carefully, like put him against the wall. Like, I do think, looking at the way that things are happening, that people are trying to be careful. Like, some people are trying to be super careful, which I just think is really great. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I thought was really interesting, I've got to find this clip and put it up, but there was a video of three black men. One was in his 40s, one was in his 30s, and then they had a 16-year-old kid that it looked like they had pulled out of the crowd. Did you watch this?
No.
I think I sent it to you. But, okay, they had this young, he's tall, young kid who looked like he was going to cry. They all looked like they were crying. And the two older guys are shouting at first. You just think that they're sort of just angry shouting, but if you listen, it gets to be almost biblical, really. The 30-year-old kind of goes back before between the 40-year-old and the 16-year-old guy, and the two older men admit in shouting, like crying out, that they have both been protesting like this since they were this young kid's age. They do it every decade, they said. They go out like this every decade. And nothing happens, nothing changes, except that their communities get worse and more burned down. And so they take this young kid by the shoulders and they shout in his face, you have to do it differently. You have to find a better way. You have to fix this. And this young kid is looking just... I mean, it looks like he's going to burst into tears, but also it's an incredibly horrible weight to put on this child who's the same age as my kid. He can't fix it. He has a big stick in his hand. You know, they're trying to pull him out of the crowd and get him to stop going in the way he's going, but because they did it themselves, this is really heartrending. Caught on film. I've got to find it and link it. And I thought, you know, I wish lots and lots of people would admit that helplessness, you know, that, well, no one knows what to do. No one knows how to fix this. There are violent people out there who are trying to co-opt a movement, or it's an old movement, actually, and take it over. No one knows. Lots and lots of white people have no idea what to do. They don't know what to do, and black people don't know what to do. Wouldn't it be amazing if we took that collective helplessness and prayed? Unfortunately, all the churches are closed, so never mind.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying on Facebook later. This is the worst possible time for churches to be closed. People have to have their churches open now, especially since if masses of people can gather in a park, not keeping socially distant.
Well, let's wait 10 days and let's see what happens.
Right? If no one gets sick, if no one gets sick, then we should open right up.
We should open
because
up.
This is,
if the whole world dies of COVID in 10 days, because a lot of people aren't wearing masks.
Right. Well, I mean, okay, I do think also that this the Antifa aspect of this, the violent looting part of this, not the actual. And there, I do think it's important to make a distinction between the protesters who are just protesting because they're grieved, and it's fine. This is a free country. That's what you're supposed to do. And the people who are, you know, just out for stuff, right? Out to loot, to steal things and burn things. But I think though that group, the second group, that's fueled not just by entitlement and just the evil desire to break and steal, but also I think the years of CRT, critical race theory, and its influence, just this is what it does. It creates a revolutionary fervor. It creates, there's nothing that can be done on the other side to rectify the injustices in society, so everything has to be torn down. You can't, and if the white people or whoever it is, if it's critical theory, it's not just white people. And I think probably the Antifa are probably working with critical theory more than with critical race theory. But if the powerful and the rich and the people who have social power aren't willing to divest themselves of that, then they just have to be crushed. There's no way for, they're all guilty because of their class or their race or their sex or whatever it might be. So we just need to just tear things down and burn things up. We're looking at what that mentality or that ideology breeds, which is why it's so destructive, which is why Christians should have nothing to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's hopeless. It's hopeless. And I don't agree that certain people in society or groups of people in society should be deemed to be so wicked that they're outside of the bounds of, you know, human community, which I don't think that's one place where I thought, you know, Brené Brown is really troubled, but she makes a good point of, because I don't think she's a little bit hypocritical, because the other things she says totally disagree with this. But shaming somebody or a group of people is not a good way to bring them back and make society peaceful.
Right.
It actually fractures things so much. You don't want anybody, you know, here's where the way out is to admit the common depravity of humanity, mm-hmm. that every single person is wicked.
And set yourself into that.
You can't.
No.
Right.
Right. So the critical theory always puts other people in that category. Right.
And they get to decide. Right? You're not.
or if you are part of that class, you can divest yourself of that and become.
You can do certain things to get rid of. You're no longer part of
the evil people, although you still have to do lifetime of penance. So your whole life has to be penance for that. And that's what you mean when you go into Twitter and you see people who are really virtue signaling, like it's all virtue signal all the time. They're doing penance for their belonging to a cursed class.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, one way you can get out of the cursed class is to admit, well, we're all wicked. We're all terribly wicked. And the only hope we have is not our own virtue. You know, it's now Gay Pride Month. Today's the first day of Gay Pride Month. And I noticed people on our street going out and carefully hanging up their rainbow flags up and down the street. And it's important that they do that right now, because they need to be, their righteousness needs to be seen before other people,
right.
So that they will be accepted. You don't need to do that. You can turn to God, the maker of heaven and earth, and he can guard your righteousness so that even if nobody else can see it, you still go to heaven. Like, okay. So the thing that I hate most right now about this is that Christians have gotten rid of the idea that virtue can be hidden. Internal and hidden. You don't need other people to see you being good. That's a foundational Christian thing.
Yeah.
You can be reviled by the world, by other people, because Jesus hides your virtue within himself and preserves you. But no, like, Christians are some of the biggest virtue signalers out there right now, which
Yeah, well, that's it's, you know, that's okay. Because another thing that critical theory does, critical race theory, or you know, just okay, let's just say wokeness, because some of them are gonna disagree with being critical theorists, but that's fine. But one thing it does is it adds quote unquote social justice onto the gospel, so that you're not even a follower of Jesus if you're not out there on Twitter saying things, you know, virtue signaling. In fact, I saw a Christian say this, that if you don't say anything, if you remain silent right now, you're not
even a Christian.
Yeah, basically. I don't want to say put words in this person's mouth, but essentially, if I don't see on your Twitter feed you saying something about this terrible thing, then you shouldn't be a pastor or something along those lines. What? I mean,
well, I saw again the people just to demonize other people. I'm not doing that. But the whole cry again, well, if you thought the God, like, just preach the gospel, that whole, don't do that. That's not.
Yeah, you can't just hold, you can't, the solution is not the gospel. The solution is political action. That what?
Okay, so I just want to articulate one more time, because I know I've said this on the same podcast over and over again. When I say the gospel, I don't mean just the words, Jesus died on the cross for your sins. That's not what I mean. When I say the gospel is the only solution, I mean the totality of God's revelation of himself in scripture, concentrated in Jesus Christ with this work on the cross that reconciles humanity to God supernaturally in a way that it could never be done by human effort.
Yeah, and it actually works.
It is actually the only thing that would break through this.
It creates, in both like Jew and Gentile, it creates a sense that I'm guilty, I've sinned, and so who am I to demand anything from my brother or sister? Who am I to demand recompense from? If I'm a Jew, who am I to demand recompense from my Gentile brother? After, you know, granted that his fathers have hurt my fathers and pained my fathers and abused my fathers,
torn down my temple.
Who am I to demand recompense from him? Because I'm just as guilty before God, and so we can be brothers and have peace. That's what Paul was preaching when he was setting up churches in Corinth and in Asia Minor and in Macedonia and in Greece. That's what he was saying. So the generational guilt and anger and wrath that's built up between Jew and Gentile ends now. And so that's what has to happen here as well.
I mean, the guiding answer to the question of wokeness, which I think we should say, and you keep saying critical theory, but people react to that, just say woke. If you're woke, that's not very good. But what you need, the answer to that is the unmerciful servant, it's my favorite. You had, you know, the emotional weight of that particular parable is so fantastic that you,
right.
You were forgiven a debt that couldn't even be measured. There wasn't actually any way to even know how much, Even if you named the amount of the debt that you owed, you can't. It's like, you know, what America owes to China. You can't really feel. It's too big, and God just absorbs that, sucks it up, takes it into himself, and lets you walk away free, as if nothing had ever happened. And then you turn around and demand that somebody pay you what they owe you. And they might owe you something. Like, it might be a real thing. Your grandfather may have been killed by that other person's grandfather. There might have been a real debt. But it's nothing it's nothing compared to the infinite wrath of a just God who owes you hell. Just, it's painful. but it's possible. And there isn't any other way out. Like, young people shouldn't be given a burden to carry to fix the problems of today.
Yeah.
Young people should be given Jesus. You know, somebody should go find those three guys and tell them about Jesus. Which I guess, you know, George Floyd would have done, except he was killed. So that's too bad. No, I mean, and all the people who say, is this the apocalypse? It's never been this bad. That's not true either. It's always been this bad. I just got through the Old Testament again. And believe me, it's always been. People have always been this wicked and this evil.
Mm-hmm. We've been kind of sheltered because in this country, the basic Judeo-Christian worldview has held fast, but that's now being torn down because that's being associated with racism. And so, you know, we need to overturn all the virtues that used to characterize the American vision anyway. Are seen as contributors to racism, sexism, all the other isms. And so that needs to be undone. And so now we're getting, now we're seeing the full brunt. I think that was common grace to have, to have it, but it's just being eroded. And now we find
we're getting to see humanity as
right.
He and she and Zer and Zim really are.
Right.
Like, who are we really? And again, I mean, no one should exclude themselves from this. Everyone is this wicked. Everyone has the capacity within themselves to burn down the park over here or to kill someone unmercifully and unjustly. Mm. But you can be rescued from that great wickedness by God. You know, he can restrain you, and give you the ability to choose good and do good things. I mean, it's the basic, it's so basic, but it's now so shocking to say. I don't know, I just feel like there's never been a better time to preach the gospel ever, and yet Christians seem to have forgotten what it is.
Well, yeah, I don't think they've forgotten. I really do think you're right when you said that I think Christians have forgotten how powerful it is. They don't believe that it's powerful.
Haven't experienced themselves its incredible power, I don't think.
Right.
They don't feel, I feel like Christians are the unmerciful servant, honestly, who walk away forgiven and don't feel the emotional weight of that forgiveness. And so are willing to go off and what's the word I'm looking for? Treat other people as if either those other people or they themselves are owed something.
Yeah.
Or not tell people about what a great thing it is to be forgiven, you know, just forget and not actually say it out loud. All the missionary zeal that fueled missions around the world has died in the throats of American Christians right now.
Well, I mean, within the woke, increasingly within woke circles, evangelization is racist. If you try to make someone a Christian or try to persuade someone to be a Christian, that's bad.
Yeah.
Because you're not valuing who they are.
Yeah.
Which sounds very Episcopalian, doesn't it? I mean, that is Episcopalian.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Well, anyway, do you feel like is there anything else you wanted to say about that? Did we solve the race problems in America?
No, of course not. I'm just really, I'm seeing that wreckage of the park this morning, really devastating. I just think it's...
I'm trying to think what I'm going to tell the kids. I got to tell the little girls something, but I'm not sure what I'm going to tell them. because I'm not eager to create it, to articulate a us versus them anything, you know, like I don't. Anyway, and all the people who I see people online who are telling their little children about George Floyd, and then their kids are drawing pictures of people saying, "I can't breathe." I'm not that into that kind of parenting. But our youngest child did hear that somebody had been killed, so we talked about it a little bit, and she was really disturbed.
She had a really hard time believing that a police officer
would kill somebody.
She kept asking, "The police officer did that? Yeah. A police officer did that? Why did the police officer do that?"
Because he's wicked.
Yeah,
he's bad. But we want people to fall into their proper categories, and they never do. So, anyway,
I mean, I'm trying to think of more to say.
I know. I don't want to. I'm sort of flabbergasted by the world today. And also I didn't sleep very well. And so I'm really tired. I woke up early and walked over to the park. And I am almost done with my edits on Nailed It. Except that I turned in my manuscript last night. And then I decided, along with the editor, that I needed to make a very critical change. So, which requires, and this is fantastic, the entire renumbering of the entire book. I'm going this morning, even though I'm very tired, to renumber the book, which means that probably there's going to be a mistake in the numbering. That's my task for today. But after I've done that, then I'll turn it in, and then it'll be done, and I can start blogging again. I know everybody is excited about that, because my important thoughts and feelings have been missing from the internet for a couple of weeks now. And that's probably why the world is melting down, is because I haven't been blogging. So that's bad. I should get back out there and solve the world's problems.
Yeah. You should do that. I'm glad you're going to be reading this book, though, because you've been horrible while you've been writing this book.
What?
You've been awful.
I've been awful.
You've been a terrible person. You shoved everything else away from you, and the house is a mess because no one can clean when you're not around. We need you to stop doing your book work so you can clean the house.
I know. No one can clean. No one can cook. No one can do anything. And no, that's a lot. Everybody else is cooking. What are you talking about?
I'm not cooking. People are cooking, but people aren't cleaning.
That's true. Nobody's cleaning. We finished school, and I finished my book, and now we're going to collapse. Well, and I guess we'll just watch the world burn down for June. And yeah. What are you going to do for June? It's a new month. How are you going to celebrate the world's depravity this month?
Well, I'm going to write sermons. Seems to be what I do. I'm going to I don't know.
I'm going to I have plans. I'm going to start. I'm going to plot out the next
You've got a book to write.
Part 2 of Nailed Psalms. The Psalms. I'm going to make this time, instead of just randomly going in, I'm going to actually make an Excel spreadsheet and put in all the verses ahead of time. And then somebody's going to give me, my dad is going to teach me how to code in the numbering so that if I want to rearrange, the document will number itself.
That's good.
So I'm going to learn how to do that in case I need to do Nailed It Part 3.
Right.
Ezekiel sounds horrible. And then I'm also gonna try to write another book, a random book that explains in more detail why it's really good for bad things happen to people.
Yeah,
that's gonna be great. I don't know. That might not work out. But I'm going to try to write two books at once this summer before school starts. So that when school starts, I won't have to write any more books. So incidentally, I need you to get out there and build me my little writing hut.
Oh my gosh.
I need that right now.
Yeah. See, Anne wants me to build her a writing hut in the backyard. After me, with like, I guess what you want, air conditioning in there? You want a heater in there? Electricity running out to it? You
want windows? I want a picture window.
My carpentry at this point consists of making a shelves.
But they're
like,
so
I
good.
I do square. I can make shelves.
I felt like they were so good. And it followed the wall. Like,
I can hammer things together.
Yeah, that's all it is. You just hammer the boards.
You're talking about a level of engineering and woodworking and the big, the biggest thing I'm afraid, maybe someone can help me. The biggest thing I'm afraid of is I don't know how to level off a floor on the ground. So I kind of want to make a deck in the backyard, but I don't know how to make I don't know how to put stakes in the ground and then make a level, not stakes, posts in the ground and then make a level wooden thing that doesn't shift. I mean, you put cement down under the,
you should look on YouTube.
I have no idea what. Yeah, I should do that. But see, I was talking to Pritchard yesterday, who said, and I reminded myself, is, you know, you can look at things on YouTube, but in the, oh, this is the how-to guide for building a deck, but like 2 minutes in,
you're completely at
they
sea.
Start asking, using these words. You have no idea what that word means. Well, you take the widget and you just make a joist angle with it and what? Like so. And they do it in like 2 seconds and
then
replaying it to see what exactly that meant. And you never figure it out.
But, I mean, can't you buy a kit? A little tiny house kit? You just put it together?
I guess you could, but you have to still level the ground.
I mean, the problem for me is if I have to write two more books in this house where I'm constantly interrupted, I'm going to go mad. I need to be able to go away from all the interruptions of the 10 people that live here, including myself. I guess I'm one of them. I feel like I learned a lot of things about writing by editing this book, and I wanted to share some of them on this podcast. Are you interested in that?
Yeah.
So I learned, first of all, that I'm very, very precious. I myself am very important and very precious, and my mood matters deeply. And I have to get everything, I have to get everything just so in order to be able to enter into the work. So I couldn't just sit down and, you know, work anywhere. I'd need to make sure that I have my proper headphones and my proper playlist and my proper cup. Can't just drink out of any cup, because the things that I'm writing are very, very important and special. And I'm very precious. I learned that editing this book.
I've learned that you are very
writers
precious.
Are very important people. Their voices matter deeply.
That's and why they write, because they know they're very confident that their voices matter.
Yeah, and they need to be known for the important words that they are going to say. I learned that. I learned also that every word that I've already written is very important, and taking any of the words that I wrote and taking them away is a little bit wicked. Actually, no, I was ruthless with my book, and then my mother went in as she was reading it and read the old ones and compared them and then be like, I like the old one better. She did that over and over again. So my ruthless editing of myself continually backfired. I think I went with hers maybe 60% of the time and then put back in the old ones, but then sometimes I didn't. No, all joking aside, I think I've discovered by working on this book that writers are not important. That you don't have a right to be a writer, I guess.
Just because you want to
express yourself. Just because you want to express yourself doesn't mean that you should. Or you can. You should keep a journal. But not everyone, maybe including me, needs to be heard all the time. And not everything that I've ever said is important and special. And most of the things I think that I've said, especially on the internet, have been the garbage that I thought they were. And it could all go up in a ball of fire and nothing would matter. I think I felt that deeply. So I was doing this and I felt a little bit humiliated by that. I would like to be a lot more important than I am. So.
I think you're.
Yeah, this is a cue for you to say, you are very important, you sweetie. Very important. Your voice does matter.
I think you're
matter.
On the way to becoming a real thought leader and an influencer. you're already somewhat there, but you need one more. You need something to push you over the edge to be
true thought leading.
Like, you know, Beth Moore quality of thought leading.
Ouch.
Where you're going to have, or you can just tweet something.
That's me.
And everyone will say, oh, Anne. Ann Kennedy said this. I'm gonna retweet her.
Yeah. So I noticed something about myself recently. When I tweet stuff or put it on Facebook or write it in a blog, it's often what a lot of people are thinking and feeling, but it's not orthodox. It's not acceptable to say it. And so no one can push like. So I might have really great stats, but no likes or retweets because I said something that was not acceptable to say. I didn't know it was unacceptable to say it until after I'd said it. And then I discovered that it was the thing that ought not to have been said. But a lot of people were thinking it. And so they are, you know, silently liking it without actually pushing like. Which just goes to show you also how important I am as a person. So I'm kidding. We're not important. We could die and it would all be fine. So do you have anything else you want to say?
No, I thought I was going to say, I had a lot to say this morning, but then just.
You're roiling.
Anything I would say would probably not be right to say. So I'm trying to not say, I'm trying to be.
You're self-editing.
You told me before we got on the podcast that I couldn't be myself. So here I am. Not being myself.
I didn't say you couldn't.
You
be
did.
Yourself.
You said I couldn't say anything that would be inflammatory. So that was basically saying you can't be yourself.
I don't think you should be inflammatory.
I mean, okay. All right.
Why do you think you should be inflammatory?
Well, because there is a solution to rioting, but you won't let me talk about this.
I don't want you to say it. I don't want you to say it.
I can't talk about it.
Your voice in this case. I don't know if it matters or not. I'm sure
I will say that the threat that I think it was Antifa put out on Twitter explicitly to break into people's homes and attack them in the suburbs, wherever. I mean, it was city or suburbs. That you know, again, that is. I don't think anybody who wants the Second Amendment to remain in force needs to do anything but just point to that tweet for the rest of. The decade, because that's okay. I mean, that justifies the need for private citizens to own their own arms and a sufficient quality and level to defend their homes against a group of people with bats and knives and whatever. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, the thing that you were saying yesterday, you really cannot say that out loud. You can think it quietly in your mind. You can't even whisper it outside. I was shocked by what. Yeah. You know, in Nairobi, then we've got to stop because I got to go back to work. After the election, the way that you would vote and dip your finger in ink. And I don't know if you, like, and I'm not sure how you could know how people had voted. Maybe it was just that people had voted. But one ethnic group went and was cutting off the fingers of people who had voted either a certain way or voted at all. But then that ethnic group that was having its fingers cut off got angry and went after the other one and just started killing people. I mean, it's not helpful to go after groups of people like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a good solution. And everybody thinks it's great, but it's not great. It's not like a movie. It's uglier and smaller and sicker than a movie. There's no music over the top. It's just bass and ruinous.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for listening to the Preventing Grace podcast. We'll probably be back next week. Who knows? But stay safe out there.